I was worrying about Titch being caged on the plane and going into quarantine in the US, but then I realized that Manol could help. I would be returning to Delos soon, anyway. He came, to my relief, and took Titch, who was no problem. Both of them disappeared in a haze. When I reached Seattle and jumped into a taxi, I felt like a stranger. I began wondering if I shouldn't have gone straight back to Telos. But first, I wanted to see my closest friends, Matthew, Nancy, and Eleanor. Nancy may even have had her baby by now. I decided to stay a month in my childhood home, and then it would be time to return inside the Earth. I missed the wisdom which pervaded Telos. Neither Swedish nor Canadian learning was enough for me. Not that Seattle was in Canada, but it wasn't far off. I'd always thought of myself as a Canadian, ever since I was a child. Before I went back to my house, I called on Matt and Nancy. I was dying to tell them about Sweden and Titch. We pulled up outside their house, and I asked the taxi not to wait. It wasn't far to walk home from there, and I didn't have much to carry. The lights were on and I rang the doorbell. It was only 8 o'clock, but it took Nancy a long time to open the door. Her eyes looked red, as if she had been crying, and I couldn't see Eleanor. Nancy was slim, so the baby must have come. Then I heard the terrible news. Matthew was dead. He had been killed in a car accident. He was hit by a drunk driver on his way home from work. His car had spun around, gone into the ditch, and smashed against some rocks. He was rushed to the hospital, but didn't survive. Nancy cried in my arms, and I tried to comfort her with all the love I could muster. We were sitting, talking about Matt, when Eleanor padded downstairs, barefoot and in pajamas. She threw herself on me, crying, "Daddy's dead. I haven't got a daddy anymore. I want a daddy. Can you be my daddy?" Nancy tried to calm her down, and in the end, I carried the 4-year-old up to bed. At her bedside was a cradle with a doll in it. The real baby had been born prematurely and didn't survive. It happened just after Matt's death, so they were grieving for two family members. When Nancy went downstairs, Eleanor whispered in my ear, "I saw that Daddy would die soon, and then I saw that you and I and Mummy would move someplace with loads of flowers." I was startled to hear this. Could I take Matt's family to Telos? That's what happened, and something else too. We took another relative with us to Telos. I rang Grandmother to say I was fine and that I was planning to depart soon for the world inside the Earth. Grandmother was on the verge of collapse. She'd received threats after the last meeting of her parapsychology friends. She'd mentioned me and Telos, believing her friends to be interested. Some unauthorized person had wormed their way in and was horrified at the discussion. She had received lots of hate mail, and even a death threat. She should have gone to the police, but that would take time. Could she come with Matt's widow and me? I asked Manol for advice in the usual way. "Of course my grandmother was welcome in Telos," was his joyful reply. I rang Grandmother and told her to pack as fast as she could and get the earliest possible flight to Seattle. It wasn't long before she was at my door with a whole truckload of luggage. The journey to Mount Shasta was tough, but we were rewarded by the sight of Manol, who met us at the hidden entrance to the subterranean wonderland. He brought Titch with him, and I was literally bowled over by his exuberant greeting. Eleanor and Titch fell in love at once. Titch became a gleaming black comfort in all our lives. Nancy had been overjoyed when I invited her to accompany me to Wonderland, but there was a lot to organize before we left. After this visit to Sweden and Seattle, I've kept away from the outer world. What I'm going to tell you now is solely about Agatha. Next headline. 8. Back underground. Look at all these flowers. Was Nancy's first exclamation as we stepped out of the small trucks which had brought us from Mount Shasta. Eleanor and Titch immediately romped around on a lawn full of daisy-like flowers of pink, yellow, and white. Manol chuckled at them. "It's great to see happy children," he said. "I bid you all a warm welcome to our land. We'll do our best to make you happy here. My grandmother, Emily looked around and then exclaimed, "This is nothing new. I recognize this from my dreams. It feels like I'm on the right side of dream world now." Our luggage, there was quite a lot of it, had come in a separate truck from the tunnel and was being loaded into one of the vehicles which floated above the ground. Manel called one of these over and asked us to climb aboard. It was nothing new to me. Nancy and Eleanor watched in surprise as I stepped into the spacious vehicle. Manel and I were able to transport ourselves differently, but I didn't want to leave my friends and grandmother alone in a foreign country. The vehicle set off towards their new home. I call it a vehicle, as the transport into Lowe's is neither car, nor boat, nor airplane. We call them hovercraft, as hover is what they do. We hovered a moment and oh, look, gosh, were the only words my friends could utter. We stopped in front of a house, one of the roofless, round houses which make up the town of Tolos. My grandmother clapped her hands in delight. She had greeted Manel like an old friend, and thanked him for his brilliant rescue of her beloved grandchild. I was a bit embarrassed, but at the same time proud of my beautiful, intelligent, and loving grandmother. When I had told her about Tolos back home in Sweden, she did not seem at all surprised. She had already dreamed about a place inside the earth. She seemed quite at home here now. Manel gazed at my grandmother in a strange way, as if they already knew each other. I didn't ask. There would come a time when all these questions would be answered. It was always like that. Eleanor, who, by the way, was known as Ellie, was first to rush through their open door. There were no dividing walls in the round house, just as there was no roof. It was just one big circular space. There were portable screens in case a separate bedroom was needed. In the center was the great living room which you furnished in accordance with your desire. There wasn't really a kitchen, just a place near the wall where cups and plates were stacked on a shelf above an ample table with drawers. I already knew this, but naturally, it seemed strange to the two ladies. "There's no oven or sink or dishwasher," came from Nancy. I could see she was desperately trying not to laugh, yet at the same time seemed on the verge of tears. Grandmother was calm. "Nice not to cook," she said, sinking into a comfortable armchair in the central section. There were flowers in abundance, even indoors. The various areas of the room were divided with flowers. It made the house cozy and welcoming. "I need to pee, Mummy." Ellie had rushed around inspecting everything, but hadn't found the bathroom. I laughed, and took her through a side door. The bathing facilities were there. There was a kind of toilet where bodily waste disappeared and dissolved ingeniously. You washed and bathed in a pool belonging to the house. As for food, you ordered it via a machine in the kitchen area, or went to the house it was served in, which I'll tell you about later. You pressed a button and then decided whether you wanted foodstuffs or a prepared meal. This involved the power of thought. "There are people who work in this town, then," observed Nancy as we walked around the garden and Titch marked his favorite spots. "Where do you live?" Suddenly, full memory of my previous time in Tolos came flooding back in. "I have my own house not far from here," I replied. "Everyone works, Nancy, but in a different way than you are used to." "What do you do?" asked Nancy again. "I'm a type of healer. I help people. There is actually a sort of hospital here, but not like those above ground. We show people how to help themselves. What if Ellie fell and broke her leg?" Nancy was stubborn. "Then I'd cure her pretty quickly." I smiled. "Anything can be cured in our way. How come there's such a difference between the surface and inside the earth?" Nancy wondered. "We've got the same soil around us. But," I responded, "there's a difference in age between your soil and our soil. The souls which inhabit this part of our globe are ancient. Some of yours are ancient too. But here the ancient wisdom is established." There was a yell from the garden, an unmistakable Ellie scream. We rushed out and, to my delight, saw Ellie face to face with a kangaroo, complete with a joey in its pouch. Nancy laughed. There are plenty of wild animals roaming freely here, and they are not at all dangerous, I said, as the terrified Ellie hid behind her mother. The kangaroo stayed, and I went and patted it. It was used to people and, looking at Ellie in surprise, it hopped off into the trees. People and animals are friends here, I explained to the frightened four-year-old. You have to learn not to be scared, and to wait for the animal to come and let you pat it. Never pat wild animals on the head, but on the neck or back, and don't rush at them. Always stay calm. Animals can sense that. Titch sat by the door as if he was guarding it. He was naturally a great guard dog, but as that wasn't necessary here, I decided to keep him just as a pet. He liked grandmother, so he might spend some time with her. I went inside. Grandmother was still in the armchair, looking a bit lost. Oh, there you are, Tim, she said, smiling. Shall I find myself a corner here? No, I replied. You're going to have your own house next door to me. Let's go now, as Nancy has plenty of unpacking to do. We walked on the grass between spaciously arranged houses and soon reached my abode and the house next door where grandmother would live. She was in rapture. It was a pale pink house with silver gables, roofless, of course, with roses and climbing plants everywhere. Goodness gracious! Repeated grandmother a number of times, as we looked around. I'm going to love it here. I really hoped this was true. Although Tolos has a friendly atmosphere, it is full of adventures too. There is wilderness outside the town, and wild animals live close by, but not with humanity as such. There are various tribes who have moved here and live their own lives. They have their own traditions, which we may find difficult to understand. The rest of us in Tolos don't get involved, why should we? There is a law here giving humans the right of freedom. Freedom is more important than anything. I told grandmother this. Freedom of the soul is a good thing, she agreed. But it's difficult to experience complete freedom while in a community with fellow humans. There are different types of freedom, Tim. You have some kind of laws here, don't you? What are they? You'll see later, grandmother. I smiled. We don't need to discuss that now. But one thing you do need to know, we have the most extraordinary library imaginable, unparalleled on Earth. The books are kind of plays performed for you. It's difficult to explain, you have to see it. I promise you, you won't be bored here. Taking a taxi to the library costs nothing, and is quick. Great. Grandmother said. May we start a complete tour tomorrow, so I can get acquainted with as much as possible of this part of our planet? Today I want to rest in my new home, inspect the garden, and feel that you, and Titch, of course, are close by. That's quite a comprehensive tour you're planning, I laughed. But first you have to see my house and find your way there, because the houses aren't laid out like on the surface. Up there they are crammed together, but here they are well spaced. There's room for a garden and a vegetable patch. If you can't manage to grow food yourself, someone will help. Let's go to my house and have lunch. I've shown Nancy how to order prepared food. We'll have dinner together, too. Grandmother and I sat discussing the differences and comparing everything to life on the surface. 9. A tour of Tolos and its vicinity. What's the time, Mummy? The question accompanied a huge yawn. A tousled, red-headed girl stretched and sat up in bed. Isn't it light? Our clocks aren't working, darling. Nancy sat on the edge of her daughter's bed. I haven't a clue what time it is, as yesterday evening it didn't get dark when we went to bed. But I feel rested, so I think you should get up now. There's a lot to see and find out, like whether you can start school here. You ought to soon, and I wonder if there's a good kindergarten, and where it is. If there's no time, no day and night, how are we to know when to get up and go to bed? I need to talk to Tim. What a weird breakfast, Mummy. I want normal milk and cereal. Have you made coffee for yourself? No, there's no stove. There was a plate of the local food here when I woke up. Tim probably arranged for it. It looks nice, A bit like green meatballs. We've got bread as well. Is there any cheese? I want some cheese. Eat what there is, Ellie. I'll talk to Tim about food, I promise. Come, let's go for a dip in the pool. Nancy sighed. It was very different from America. How could her daughter ever understand the huge, revolutionary differences between here and their home in Seattle? Right now the most important thing for Ellie was cereal and milk and the chocolate drink she was used to at home. Nancy missed coffee and the generous breakfast she was used to. Yesterday evening, my grandmother had shared the food she'd brought from Sweden, and it was wonderful. Lots of things are different here compared to what you're used to. A cheerful voice said. It was me, Tim, arriving with a basket of locally produced food. Imagine you were shipwrecked on a South Sea island and you had to eat the same as the local inhabitants. You'd have to get used to it. It's the same here. You'll get used to the food, and you won't want anything else. That's what happened to me. I soon forgot all about ham, lamb chops, and rare steak. Shut up, Nancy was cross. I'll soon get used to it and probably Ellie will too, but I keep asking myself if I've done the right thing in coming here. Ellie is having this pushed on her. Now it was my turn to get angry. That's a bit strong, Nancy. This is paradise. Chocolate muffins, English marmalade, and jellied veal are not part of it. The most important thing is not what you eat, but what's inside you. Your inner life, I mean, love, joy, beauty, friendship, and compassion are important here. You'll meet people who can explain this better than I can. Grandmother is outside talking to Ellie and Titch. We're off on a tour now. Nancy was sulking, but she followed Titch and the others into the hovercraft I had arranged for. As soon as they were seated, the vehicle rose a few feet and hovered above the ground. The houses were widely spaced in a beautiful area and there were no roads, just a few paths trodden through the grass. Not many, and they didn't go far. On the Earth's surface, we eat food which is processed and transported long distances, I said, regarding Nancy and Ellie gravely. Strangers made that food, and it is imbued with their personal energy. Food on the surface contains a hodgepodge of energies, not all of them clean and pure. Here we eat food grown nearby, in our own neighborhood. It hasn't been processed, and is completely natural. We enjoy cooking and creating with it, without byproducts. Heating up food destroys its nutritional value, but hard beans and such need cooking and homegrown spices. Where do you get hold of it? Asked Grandmother. Are there central food stores where you can obtain it? Oh yes! I exclaimed. You can either walk there or take a hovercraft. They're not far away. Not everyone has their crops ready at the same time. But I haven't seen a single person working here, Nancy commented. Do invisible slaves do all the work for you? Everyone works 4 hours a day, I replied. We work intensively, without a break, to get everything done. Everything is well organized, but there are absolutely no slaves. We take time off without needing permission. Because everyone has a job they enjoy, this is never a problem. There must be factories, Nancy complained. That's often monotonous and dirty work. I began to find my best friends pretty, little wife slightly trying, but Ellie came to the rescue. I can make paper from sand and water, she claimed, eagerly. We use hemp. I smiled. It makes great paper. You can see how it's made. It's lovely to feel this sun on my face, Grandmother said suddenly. It doesn't feel as if I'm going to get sunburn. You won't hear, I explained, putting my hand on hers. Our sun is electromagnetic based, and doesn't produce dangerous rays. Is Tilo's big? Asked Ellie, stretching out her arms as far as she could and standing up in the vehicle, which rocked. If I hadn't caught her, she would have fallen out. Sit still, Ellie, I warned her. I'll tell you how big Telos is. Telos isn't a country, just the main town in this part of the kingdom of Agartha, which exists under the entire surface of the earth. That's really big. There are countries and states and different kinds of people, just like on normal, Earth. It sounds wonderful. Grandmother's eyes glittered and glistened in the calm, pleasantly warm sunshine filtering through the trees, brushing our faces with its silken rays as we bumped along on uneven air thermals. The vehicle stopped in the air a moment, and then sank down to land a few inches from the ground. I stepped out and my three comrades followed. Water glittered close to where we'd stopped. From the green grass on the shore, a small bridge led to an island which seemed connected to both sky and lake. Shimmering blue above and fading into emerald green, it appeared as a rare jewel floating on the waves. In a way, it was just that. I padded barefoot across the bridge, less than 20 feet, 6 meters, long. The green grass sparkled on the other side, too. I had been here many times before, and knew my way in this amazing place. The small pavilion was surrounded by a sea of flowers. Above it was an arch, carved with the word Portologos. This was one of the innumerable entrances to the enormous library which spread out under Talos. The pavilion was incredibly beautiful, with walls of precious stones, and inside a staircase leading downwards. It had a church-like interior, the stones reflecting and refracting the light in a multitude of nuances. My grandmother, Emily, stopped, and clapped her hands in a typical gesture. Nancy looked around like a tourist. "Where do the stairs go?" she asked. "Down to Hades, huh?" I didn't appreciate the laugh that accompanied her question. Ellie didn't know what Hades was, and was hopping around without a care in the world, now and then touching a beautiful gemstone. She certainly didn't look like someone who had been forced to come here, I thought, as I went downstairs and Titch sneaked past me. He didn't like going downstairs slowly. I held grandmother's hand, although she was as nimble on her feet as a 20-year-old. I saw Nancy holding on tightly to Ellie, though the child didn't appear at all scared. "Maybe it's Nancy who is scared," I thought. I was right. Her fear would surface again and again. It was light and warm downstairs. Manel was standing in the beautifully sculptured doorway to welcome each of us with an embrace. Ellie got the biggest hug, and was lifted into the air by the tall man and danced in a circle. She put her arms around his neck as he set her down. "I like you," she said. "You and Titch are my best friends." Titch was already off into the immense archive with his tail wagging happily, way in front of us. "We're in the biggest library in the world, called Manal, in English, which was mostly the language we used, unless I whispered something to grandmother in Swedish. English was her favorite language, and she talked and read it fluently. We can find out about almost everything here, whether it's the past or present of our own Earth, or elsewhere in the universe," he continued. "Instead of books, there are actors who answer our questions. They act out scenes as answers." "Just wait. There aren't any books here?" cried Nancy angrily. "It's not a library, in that case. Ask something," I suggested. "There are books here too, but plays are more common. Was there really someone called Merlin, or is he a myth?" Nancy immediately asked. "Come with me," cried Manal, and he led us up some steps to a wide corridor with doors on either side. "I have to describe what it's like in our special library, which was originally an enormous cave. There are small stages everywhere, combining film and reality in an endless store of knowledge. There's a network of passageways and rooms which you need a guide to show you. We have plenty of guides, some elementals, and some holograms. All our inhabitants are eager to learn. By living in a symbiotic relationship, we benefit from collective knowledge, but this can be transferred to individuals. And questions are welcome, that's what the library is for." I tried to explain all this to Nancy as we followed Manal down the passageways. As we stopped near a booth that was reminiscent of a theater with comfortable seats, Merlin greeted us from the stage. He told us that he had really existed, and had been an important, respected, but envied, wizard. He performed some magic tricks, which made Ellie scream with delight. Suddenly, there was a small, white rabbit on her lap, and equally suddenly, it was gone again. He described his life to Nancy, who was amazed. Then he acted some scenes and showed film clips. The widely renowned magician concluded, "I am neither invention nor imposter." Nowadays, the world on the surface is ruled by swindlers who, consciously or unconsciously, make it their duty to mislead people. But a new era is coming. The surface is about to undergo a cleaning and a cleansing like never before. There will be pain and innocent sacrifices, but the result will be reconstruction in the name of love and truth, converting the planet into a carrier of light. I, Merlin, proclaim this in the name of the eternal truth. The stage darkened. We were mesmerized. Then Nancy got up and burst out, "But it's just a play. It's not like that in reality. It was the actor's role to express it that way. Can we see some books now?" I was astonished, and grandmother was too, as she pinched my arm and seemed shocked. Ellie started crying. "It was all true, Mummy. Tell me it was." Manal lifted the little girl up and whispered in her ear. A big smile replaced the tears. I'll never know what he told her, but it cheered Ellie up, which was the important thing. It took a long time to see a just small part of the library. Sometimes there were wider galleries hung with lovely paintings, where tables, chairs, and couches invited rest. We stopped when we were hungry, and refreshing drinks appeared. We didn't see anybody serving, but Manal explained that he had arranged for the refreshments on arrival in one of the galleries. Ellie didn't protest, she just consumed what was on offer with delight. Nancy carefully tried a mouthful before swallowing it, as if scared she was being poisoned. "We can test it on Titch, if you like," I suggested spitefully. "He can stomach anything." Grandmother gave me a warning look, but Nancy took some bread and fed it to the dog. He gulped it down and looked for more. I gave him some, of course. Ellie was beginning to tire, and I asked Manal if we could stop. He led us straight to an exit, where a lift took us back outside. Out there, it was as light as day. The most difficult thing about living here, I think, is the lack of day and night. The friendly sunshine is eternal and unchanging. For surface dwellers it's difficult to acclimatize, but in the end you get used to it. 10. A fond reunion and a new acquaintance. Whether it was day or night, Nancy yawned all the way home, and Ellie slept on Manal's lap. Grandmother, Manal, and I decided to go for a walk when we got back home. I have no idea where Manal lives. He's always there when you need him. Nancy said a sleepy good night and carried in her slumbering daughter. You have to find your own walkways, as there aren't any roads. I learned fairly soon after coming here how to walk around, or hover around, Interlows. You can go by hovercraft, but you can also hover yourself, only a few inches above the ground. But even so, it's a great feeling. Grandmother couldn't do it yet, so we walked arm in arm over the grass, while Manal hovered a little way in front of us. Suddenly he stopped. We could hear music and boisterous singing. A host of dancing couples appeared, lovely and lithe. Gorgeous. Was, of course, my grandmother's comment. How wonderfully in step they dance. Feel free to join in, if you want to, suggested Manal. We'll meet up by that tree over there when you're tired. He disappeared into the whirling dance and grandmother and I followed closely on his heels. It wasn't easy to define the dance in words. It seemed as if everyone moved separately to the music, yet there was harmony, as if there was some general plan to it all. Hello again. Behind me was a voice I recognized and had longed for. My exquisite friend, Cicilla, took my arm and danced off with me. Long time no see, was the extent of my repartee. Time doesn't exist here, she said, smiling. Here it's always just now. As long as all of us think positively and devote ourselves to enjoyment and love, our now will continue. On the surface, you act joie de vivre, and you have turned love into something profane and unethical. We like working. We like relaxing. We like helping each other. We like walking in our beautiful forests. We like meeting people we love. She dropped my hand and disappeared in the crush of dancers. I called out to her and tried to struggle through the veils and flickering hair, in vain. Instead, I bumped into Manal, who took me over to a large tree.